I asked for a girl, and God must have known something I don't, because he didn't give me one. And that's okay, because I've really started to... So we have, I don't know if my family's on the PowerPoint, they are. I run a teenage girls organization called Tatter Tierras, and part of my team is here as well, which is nice. But I guess the irony of it all is that I literally have chosen to direct an organization for teenage girls when I have none myself. So I don't know, maybe people are going to be like, why do I listen to you? You don't have any girls. However, I've made up for it in, yeah, this is my family. Obviously the three boys, and then we have recently taken a teenage girl into our home, which she's not here today, so I can say all I want about her, but oh, I have learned a lot in the last 4 months, let me tell you. It's one thing running a teen girls organization, and it's another thing having a teenage girl living in your home. So I think I'm good with the boys, but I love her to death, except she's in trouble because she's not in church this morning. But so Kira, if you're listening, you're in trouble. But I love her with all my life, and I'll talk about whatever, a little bit of why she's with us later. But I'm in a season where I'm with doing family right now, but as I say that, I'm also, you know, running an organization, and I like to be busy. I'm learning, as I'm about to talk to you, I'm a little hypocritical. I'm learning what is too busy and not busy enough and priorities and all that thing, but whatever. It's who the heck knows how to do this thing right. So I'm doing the best that I can, and it's pretty fun. And Bobby and I, my husband, we've decided when we got married, like, we're just going to live the adventure, figure it out as we go. And some days we're like, what on earth are we doing with ourselves? Why did we do this? We worked at King Street Community Church in Oshawa for 5 years, the past 5 years. And we just recently, I did young adults. I did a lot of random different things, not random, but different roles there. And my husband was the student ministries pastor for five consecutive years. And we just recently resigned there, and we're moving to Peterborough in a month because he accepted a job at Master's College and Seminary, which is where we both met. It happens at Bible College sometimes. It's a bonus. But yeah, so that's me, I guess. I like to do new things all the time. I think Bobby's like, why don't you just, you know, get one job? I'm like, I don't really want one job. Like, I want a little of this and a little of this and a little of this. And God has made it so that I can do that, and I'm thankful for it, because I think he has directed my life in such a way where, as I'm going to talk about, he's used different gifts that he's given me for different seasons and different people, and I just never really know what's going to happen next month. So I like to make myself available for whatever's going to come next month, and then I just dive on into that, and it always ends up being crazy and fun and worth it. So that's what I'm going to invite all of us into while I talk. But thanks to Pastor Steph, she's not here, so if I bomb this, it's her fault. And when she comes back, you'd be like, maybe you shouldn't have gone on vacation, Steph. Maybe you should have taken a break. But yeah, she probably really does need, she has four kids, so do you take all the time you need, Pastor Reverend Stephanie? So thanks to her. And you know what the best thing about her is? She told me I can preach on whatever I want, and I never get to do that. Like, it's always a part of a series. It's always something complicated. Or I've recently gone through a mental health battle the last 2 years. I got postpartum depression. I'm just going to throw these things in there. Just some lighthearted. Postpartum depression after my second son. And so I've been kind of struggling with anxiety and depression and trying to whatever fight that life for the last 2 years. So I've just out of that, because I'm very open about it, obviously, I get asked to speak about that a lot. And so that's okay. I love doing it. But you don't leave after a talk like that and like smile and, woo, I feel so good. And everybody leaves feeling so good. Like, there's hope in there. But yeah. So I chose something that's going to make me happy, which is talking about love, like loving and using our gifts. And so, yeah, you're going to see me smiling lots and not bawling on the stage, which is a nice change for me. If you want me to talk about that, you just tell stuff. My whole row's laughing at me because they know I ramble before I actually get to talking about anything. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about, what I've chosen, is talking about connection and truly connecting to people, truly connecting to God. And I chose this because this is something that has literally changed everything for me. Having people in my life see me, truly see me and connect to me, and then out of that connection using their gifts and knowing what I need and coming alongside of me and championing me and cheering me on. And then what also has changed my life, and just add, it's the difference of living day to day and not really feeling much purpose to just living my best life. Like, I don't know, that's what these young people say. Young, I just turned 30. I don't know if I what I classify as anymore. But the younger people than me say I'm living my best life. And I really am. I'm living my best life. And the reason I'm doing that is because God has infused purpose into so many areas of my life as I've really become, for lack of a better word, like addicted to loving people and seeing them and giving to them in whatever way I can. And I'm learning, that's the fun, it's difficult, but I'm learning what that looks like for me, for Kathleen, how to connect to the people that God has given to me. And as I do that, it's only getting better and better and better and better. It's getting harder and harder and harder, but it's getting better. It just adds so much fullness to my life. And so I chose something that I think if you do this, if you get it, if you take this invitation to you, it will change everything for you. It will change everything about the way that you live. It will change the people who are in your life. It'll change the way you view God, the way you view the world. It'll change the way you view the difficult people in your life, the hard to love people, the easy to love people. And I believe that if you do this, you truly, no matter what's going on in your life, difficult, challenging, surprising, you'll be able to say that you're living your best life at the end of it, because it's the life that Christ has called us to. So the problem with connection is that we're living in a world that's very disconnected. And the reason it's very disconnected is because we as a humanity, we as a species are pretty attention deficit. We don't need a diagnosis to determine that about ourselves. I think if you really think about it, like, we can all admit that. We have breaks in our connections with people all the time because there's so much to distract us. There's so much to just fill our minds. And so I think that what's happening today is that we're forgetting things more often. We don't even have to remember birthdays anymore because Facebook tells us, thank the Lord. Yes, care for Facebook, because without it, I wouldn't know. Like, yeah, maybe my mom and my siblings and the people I went to grade four with, because, like, literally, but I don't remember. And I count on this technology to remind me, and we forget phone numbers because we don't need to remember them anymore. They're just there. And I think we don't even realize how distracted we really are and how little space there is in our minds for the things that we really need to be giving attention to and thinking about. So there's not a lot of room for uninterrupted connection, because it's too easy today to have things just come in and break that connection, break our connection to the people we love, the people who are in our homes, the people who are outside of our homes, the people who are in our church. And that's a problem, because there's a cost to that break in connection. I read a stat that we make about 35,000 remotely conscious decisions a day. And that makes me not feel so bad when I'm going through the drive-thru and my husband asks, what do you want? I'm like, I don't know. And I start freaking out. Like, I can't decide. And I get the same thing every time, so I don't know why it's such a problem. But you know what? It's because maybe that was my 34,000th decision that I've made in the day, and I'm a little tired. And I don't know, but that's a problem. And that goes to show you how we don't even think about that, right? We don't. Women, well, okay, never mind. Men too. Literally. Yeah, okay, whatever. We make so many decisions we don't even think about. Where are the kids' socks? Where's the kids' matching socks? Where's the kids' shoes? What, do we really need to wear the shoes? Who's going to judge us if we don't put the shoes on the kid? What's the temperature? Who cares? Are we going to bring their bathing suits in case we want to go to the pool after? Well, it's Sunday, so the pool might be closed. No, we're going to bring the blah, blah, blah. Did we feed them? Shoot, we forgot to feed them. What's open? Where can we go? Are people going to judge me for walking in with McDonald's? Is McDonald's going to smell up the church? It did. We did that, and whatever, okay? Please have us back. But so if you stop and think about it, I'm like, so every once in a while I do. I stop. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I don't want to make any more decisions. I'm tired. I just want to go to sleep. But you don't get to sleep when you have three kids under four. and many of you in your own lives, you have to keep choosing. You have to keep deciding. There's always something to decide. There's always something we could do. There's always something we could answer. There's always something we could do better. And we don't get to connect because we're too distracted. We're too busy. And then also we kind of isolate ourselves. It's weird. And I know it won't be the first time you've heard this, but you know, technology is amazing. I'm not like no technology. Well, sometimes I'm no technology, especially with the teenager living with us. But technology is amazing in the sense of it's expanded our worldview. It's made us more educated. It's given us so many good tools when used properly, has changed our world, changed the healthcare system, has changed. It's amazing, but with anything good, there can be a negative to it when it's not used properly. And so here we are, and we think, oh, look, we're connected to so many people. Well, I'm connected to like 1,500 people on Facebook. I'm like, how many of them do I actually connect to? Even my own family, you know, oh, we can Skype call now, we can FaceTime. But how often am I really truly like connecting to my mom, who's 3 hours away? Like, how often am I truly connecting to my husband when we can just text each other and we go call and whatever, like we have, or we're watching TV or we're watching Netflix. When was the last time we actually sat and had like a conversation, like a real connecting conversation? And the problem is that we don't usually see the cost to these breaks in our connections until it's either too late, or it's never too late, or until it's really difficult to repair that connection. Sometimes relationships just get broken completely. Bridges get burnt. We get misunderstandings. Think, are they actually even my friend? They've never even asked how I'm doing. Or someone calls us and they're talking about themselves. They never just stop and hear and listen. And our world loses out. And the people we love the most, they lose out. The people who are being loved and seen by nobody loses out because we're too busy. We're too distracted. Our kids, they lose out because we're not in the moment with them. And, you know, we can't get this thing perfect, but I think we can probably do a whole lot better than we are, and that's what I'm committed to. Our church, it loses out when we're not really knowing the person. Like, you guys, I can tell you've got a pretty good vibe here with, like, knowing each other, that you laugh when someone goes and, like, takes a microphone, and we're all really excited about retirement. Like, you clearly know each other, and you know what? Like, there's no excuse not to. In these, I can count the seats. You guys can know a lot about something. I don't want everyone to know a lot about me. Get over it. Like, you know, it's better. It's better when you let people know you and you know other people. So I want you to take a video. I want you to watch this video with me, and I love it. And it makes you feel everything. It makes you feel awkward. It makes you feel like, oh, that's nice, and laugh. And I think this video does a great job at showing kind of that how unnatural it is to really connect to people sometimes, even the people we know, but also the power of truly connecting to people. So let's watch it. It's like it needs to be a little louder.
I feel nervous. Do you feel nervous? I don't know what we're doing.
I should have peed first.
What, you mean staring at each other's, looking into each other's eyes?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem natural.
4 minutes is a long time. No other instructions?
No, I have to look in your eyes.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Get ready, my age.
I can blink, right?
That's what's happening.
I'm gonna hypnotize you.
Thank you.
you feel?
Weird. In 55 years of marriage, we've never really looked into each other's eyes like that. But I do look at your eyes sometimes because I'm checking your blood sugar.
You check on me all the time.
Yeah.
I wondered what you were thinking.
How wonderful it was to just sit here and look at my wife for a change without discussing work, business, and situations.
When I look at you really closely, I realize how much I need you and what you mean to me, and because that's the truth. And I couldn't imagine being with anybody else.
It's pretty interesting to be able to sit in front of someone that you don't know.
I feel like you can't not see each other.
We can walk away and let's go have a drink.
It was actually nice to meet you.
I feel like we can get right to the dance floor after something like this.
Aren't they cute? So how many of you would feel awkward if I just picked two of you? I'm not going to do it. To come up here and just stare at each other for 4 minutes in complete silence. It feels unnatural, right? But you see, it's like we were made for it. Like we were created to connect to each other. We were created to see one another. And I love it. I love the subtle things, you know, that they say. It was so, the one couple where it was nice to just look at you for a change, you know, not talk about anything. There's always something to talk about, right? Like, you know, we have a baby, we're moving. It's very easy. We go out sometimes for our like break and we find ourselves talking about the kids, talking about, okay, what are we going to do when we move? It's like, oh, I just want to tell myself to shut up sometimes. It's like, just stop talking. Like, stop talking and just like look at the people who God has gifted to you to connect with, and just let everything else kind of go to the side for a second. And I'm convinced that if you do that, you can't really look at someone for 4 minutes without having a shift like happen in you, like a change. Like you kind of see it there, right? It was really awkward. My husband and I were telling someone earlier, we had to do this, I think twice someone made us do this, and it was premarital counseling and prenatal classes. And we were joking because we were like, we almost got kicked out of the class because we were children. Like, we couldn't do it. Like, I'm like, I just burst out laughing. I'm like, and he was looking at me like, why are you looking at me like that? And it was just like, oh gosh, it was painful. Like, not, he's good to look at, not that part. He's good to look at, but it was just like, oh, like, this is so uncomfortable. It's like, why is it uncomfortable? Especially with the people that, you know, we say we love. If I looked at them now, my kids would never sit still for 4 minutes, but I don't even need to look at them for 4 minutes. I look at them for like 3 seconds and I just am like, ugh, I forget every terrible thing you just did. Like, the permanent marker's still on the wall and I'll see that later, but like your heart just gets gripped. And that's what happens when you truly connect to each other, is your heart gets gripped again and it gets reminded and it gets shifted and it gets put into perspective. I'm convinced that if in marriages, like, we haven't tried this yet. I haven't even told them this. I'm like, well, we're gonna do this at some point very soon. Maybe we'll do it today so that I don't forget. But we're just gonna sit there and we're gonna look at each other for 4 uninterrupted minutes, and just to do it, just to stop, and just to refocus and to rethink. And I think that's an incredibly powerful exercise to do. And you know, to do it with someone you love. That makes a little more sense than doing it with a stranger. It might be a little creepy, but we need to get better at seeing strangers too, like noticing them, connecting to them. And I think that that's the key to relationships. No relationship can last when it's a one-sided thing. You need two people to just sit and connect. And someone maybe sometimes needs to be the one to initiate it, to initiate fixing those broken connections. But you do the best that you can to fix it because people are worth it, right? The people you love, they only get you maybe to connect to like that. And so we need to give it a shot and we need to start implementing that into just how the way we live our lives is stop, look, let it be awkward until it's not. And then you get to laugh and you get to love and you get to have your change of perspective. The Bible is just filled with examples of people who saw other people, who truly connected, and examples of nations changing, humanity changing. I'm just going to rhyme off a few that I thought of as I was putting this together, but God saw Adam from the very beginning of time. God saw Adam and Eve in the garden, and he wanted them. He said, after they fell, after they ate from the tree, he said, where are you guys? And we all know God knows where we are, right? But that was a perspective shift he wanted to give to Adam and Eve. He wanted them to know where they were in proximity to himself. He wanted them to know, hey, our connection has been broken, and there's a cost to that, and I want it to be repaired. Christ saw Zacchaeus hiding out in a tree and said, hey, let's go do dinner. I won't name any names, but like, can you think of a politician who would be pretty difficult to sit and have dinner with, or someone who just audited your business, like, or someone who gave you a parking ticket? Like, that's the equivalent of a tax collector in those days asking to, hey, let's go to your house and have some dinner together. But he did it, and it changed Zacchaeus' life. He also saw the Samaritan woman at the well, saw into her story, saw into her shame, and he exchanged this cup of water that she gave him for an entirely different way of living. He changed her life by seeing her, and he saw into probably the shameful parts of her, and he said, hey, here's an invitation. I'm connecting with you. And in connecting with you, I'm showing you an example of what it's like to connect to the Father who loves you and offers you a better life. God saw Rahab, who was a prostitute with a reputation, and he brought her into his family tree. He said, I'm not just going to give you a chance to be saved. She hid the spies, right, who were watching out. And he said, hey, come and I have a better life for you. But not only that, like, God always takes things and he just blows them up, like, from what we think he could do. And he literally says, I will bring you into the family line of my son. And a prostitute with a bad reputation that no one would have seen, he sees and he says, here, look at this life I'm going to invite you into. Christ saw the thief on the cross in his most painful, excruciating moment. He saw his regret and his faith, and he invited him to connect. He invited him to join in eternal paradise. God saw a nation, Israel, in slavery under Pharaoh, and he delivered them through Moses and Joshua. He saw a humanity, us, that went our own way, and instead of just letting us be, to leave us to ourselves, he said, I'm going to make everything right again. And he's doing that every single day of our lives, right? Mary gave Jesus food. Martha gave him time. I'm not giving anybody food. No one should want it, but I can give time. Christ saw an adulterer in the street waiting for stones to be thrown at her, and he drew this line of safety and of grace between her and her accusers. Can you imagine if we did that? Just that? Like, if we just drew lines for people and said, hey, you come over here and connect with me, and I'll protect you, and I'll keep you safe, and I'll accept you, and I'll protect you from your accusers, because they don't have a right to accuse. Because we're all on the same playing field. We just don't like to admit that sometimes in the eyes of God, right? So let's look to the Bible. 1 Peter 4, verse 7 is our first passage here, and it says this. It says, the end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. There's the key. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength that God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Peter starts out here with the end of all things is near. And he doesn't do that as some kind of panicky person who's like, Jesus is coming back, so come on, get everything right. What he's doing is he's providing a perspective shift for the people he's talking to. He's saying, hey, you know what? Like, sometimes we like to live like we've got forever to figure this thing out, and we actually don't. And to live like we have forever to figure it out is kind of a crummy way to live. But if you live, whether we have, you know, a week till Christ comes back, whether we have our whole lifetimes till he comes back, what Peter's trying to say here and shift here for people is the better way to live, no matter how much time you have, is to live connected, is to live with the strength of God. And there's a reason why he says right at the very beginning, so be of sober mind and alert so that you can pray. If you're clear-minded and you stop and you take the time to give yourself your perspective shift, then you actually know what to pray for, you're motivated to pray for it, and you recognize that you can't do a dang thing in this life on your own strength, because it takes strength to love and to serve like Christ did, because it's not in our nature. There's a reason we ate from the tree. I like to blame everything on Eve, and I have a few things I want to blame on her, but this is what our natural inclination does, is we choose the other way. And so we need the strength of God to choose right, and we need the strength of God to love the difficult people, because we're not him. But we don't have an excuse if he resides in us. If we say the Holy Spirit has been left for us, then the Holy Spirit can do some amazing things in us in spite of who we are and in spite of what our natural inclination is. So we don't have forever to get it right. And there's that what worries me most in life is that I'm just freaking out over the wrong stuff. Like, I'm just stressed out over the wrong things. And I know that there are more important things in this world than the things that keep me awake at night. Some of the right things keep me awake at night, and I think we know the difference. And I think when we're realizing that our stress and the things we're carrying are things that don't matter, you know, you made a joke of it this morning of getting dressed for church. Weirdly enough, that's been passed down through the generations for women, at least. Like, I don't know how Bobby asks, is his shirt too wrinkly? I'm like, it's a borderline. So he fixes it. But that's about the only question he asked me. I'm like, okay, I'll wear this, wear this, wear this, wear this. I had three kids. What even fits in this place? Like, it's, but we, and then, so it, and that's fine. But when I start being like, ugh, like I grew up with that. I grew up seeing this as an example of, I'm not going because I have nothing to wear. It's like, oh my, we need a perspective shift. Like, very badly. And that's our humanity, and it's okay to admit that we're like that sometimes, but we need his help to do it. So next, a connected church, and this is the importance, is there's, we can be connected as people, but as a church, because I'm standing in your church, might as well take the opportunity to tell you how this can work for you. I'm really excited for you, and that's random for someone who's not a, I am a part of you. We're a part of each other. But I'm excited for you because just hearing, having some conversations, you guys are in this shifting, like, renovation mode of being able to, like, build and expand and start fresh and start new. And there's just something exciting about that. And there's something exciting about when you can, like, see the faces of each other and do it together and to give what you have to give. Like, I'm like, maybe I'll just come over sometimes and visit, because I just think it's such an exciting thing to be a part of. If you get excited for it, if you, with the same enthusiasm as you gave our friend over here for Ladies Day, if you do that same enthusiasm for, we're gonna make this room look so good for our kids, like, for the newcomers. By the way, impressive room you've got started there. Like, if that's the start, good things coming. Looks like my nursery at home, so my kids are probably really comfy in there. Anyways, okay, so Acts 2 is the church, right? It's here Paul is saying, you want a healthy, connected church? Here's what you got to do. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together, and not just Sundays. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. What a cool church, eh, to be a part of. Like, and we're tempted to be like, oh, that's so nice. What a nice church. Woo, we're all eating bread together, having a buffet. Someone brought the meatballs with the Diana sauce. Like, this is good. And we skip over the part where they talk at the very beginning of, like, they sold all their possessions to give to the people who were in need. Sometimes we just want to skip to the dinner. And we want to show up and we don't want to bring anything. I'm just hoping that someone's going to bring ribs. But, like, I'm never buying, this is expensive. Like, I'm bringing the Timbits. Like, and whatever. Sometimes you have to bring the Timbits. That's okay. I'm going to go on forever about this random point, so I need to stop. But this is how you get true connection, is it's going to cost you something. And it's okay. We've saved up enough as people to afford it, to afford giving of ourselves to another person. God has given us so, so much. If you just stop and make a list of it, you'll be blown away by what he's provided for you in your life. And so to have a healthy church, we have to have a mindset that's not just about the taking. It's not just about this bystander effect of, I'm going to sit here and someone else will do it. Someone else will paint. Someone else will weed. Someone else will get Pastor Steph a coffee. You're welcome, Pastor Steph. Bring her coffees. Someone else will do this. Someone else will make the coffee. Someone else will watch the kids in the nursery. It's like, no, that's such a boring way to live. Such a boring way to live when two people are doing it all. Like, take your part. Like, jump in. Jump in and get your hands dirty in whatever way you have. No one's asking you to bake a lasagna and take it next door if you can't make a lasagna. I've never made a lasagna in my life. That's probably pretty bad because they're pretty easy, apparently. I just haven't. So when the meal train comes along, I'm not jumping on it. But what I'm doing is, I love talking. As you can. I love talking. Like, I love tea. I can sit and have someone cry and snot all over me for 5 hours, and I'll leave feeling like, yes, I gave, like I did something. This is what I'm good at. And so I do that. Like, I have people over into, if someone wants to enter into my chaotic home, by all means, you come on over, and I'll give you what I have to give. Bobby will give them food. He's way better at that. But I'll give you my time. I'll listen, and I won't judge you. I'll receive you and I'll connect to you. And that's what I have to give. And that is just as valuable as making cauliflower quinoa pizza crust. I cannot do it. Some of you can, and it's delicious, but no. Who knew that you could do that? Not me. So don't just take Bob Goff. He's a lawyer, a speaker, an author. If you haven't heard of him, oh, he's just the best. And he's, aside from the Bible, he's the only one I'm quoting in my talk. That's okay. I quoted the Bible, people. So there's two books I would recommend, and it's going to come up at the end. But here's something he says. These people, the people who truly connect, the people who love really well, they haven't tried to save up love like they're going to need it later for themselves. They know we're rivers and we're not reservoirs. We were never created as Christians to just hold things in and in case we need it later. Like, yeah, you have to be wise. You have to save some things up for later. But I've discovered something working, well, living on one income, a ministry income, for 5 years. You can't outgive God. Like, you just can't. I've always eaten. My kids have always eaten. We've had a roof over our heads, and if we didn't, we'd move into the Burtons. Like, God finds a way to provide, and so just test him, because it's a really cool way to live when you just, not be dumb, but, like, risk a little. Risk a little in that way to give to someone else who needs it more than you, and you will be provided for, I promise you. So, for anyone who's introverted, or anyone who hides when the doorbell rings, like, actually freaks out, because I'm like, who does not call first? It's 2018, like, you're selling me something if you're ringing my doorbell and I don't know you're coming. So I'm like, just be quiet, everyone be quiet. Shh, Willem, don't move. And I'm like, trying to peek, I'm like, oh, it's just my grandparents, because they don't need to call. So I'm like, oh, what am I wearing? Like, but we're not really geared up that way. So it can be hard to practice this, to like let someone walk into your house. I've just stopped apologizing. I'm like, hey, this is my life. Come on in or don't come in. But if you come in, you don't have a right to complain about my laundry. See, Wendy's great. She comes over and she just does it. So I'm like, if you want to be your true friend, just do that. Don't ask. Wendy's mine, all right, everyone? Back off. Like, she's not doing all your laundry. Find someone else. Okay, so truly connecting. So here's how you see people, and I'm done. This will be cool. Ah, no, it won't. Bobby's, like, laughing at me. Okay, see people one-on-one. Here's what you do. Because, like I said, it's harder. It sounds all nice and fluffy when I'm saying it. It actually is. It's difficult to shift your thinking like this, especially if you're busy and you're distracted. But here's step number one. Check yourself. How distracted are you? Bobby and I, we just got an app on our phone to tell us how much time we're spending on technology. We're just going to let it ride out for a bit, and then we'll do something about it when we see. But it's a little humbling. Like, some of you don't need to worry about that, but something else. Like, what are you spending your time doing? Sometimes we can be distracted and busy just by sitting and binging on Netflix or gardening for 100 hours and not talking to a human. Like, whatever it may be, just how busy and distracted are you? What's stepping in? What's causing a break in your connection with people? How prideful are you? I'm pretty prideful sometimes. Like, I like to be comfy. I tell Bobby a lot, I don't need any more friends. I got enough. Like, because it's hard to give and give and give. Like, it's difficult. But what a selfish thing to say. Like, that's awful. Like, that's not a way to live either. Like, check yourself up, or oh, like, I don't, I'll help this person, because I think I've got about a couple hours in my week, I'll help that person, but no, I can't get to that person. I can't get to that person, like, when my kids are 10. Or it's like, no, like, it's pride. Like, that's I'm elevated above that person. Like, my needs are higher than that person's needs. And we do that a lot, and we don't realize it, so sometimes we actually need to stop and check and do an inventory of ourselves. Romans 12:3-5 says this, For the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. The only difference between me and the most difficult person to love in my life is I was handed a pretty sweet deal of cards. I live in Canada. I was raised by parents who I felt safe with, I felt loved by. They weren't perfect by any means, but I made it through. I was a punk teenager, but I had people who saw me and loved me and didn't give up on me. I had people who stepped in when I was depressed and anxious and had a mental health battle. Like, I had those things. Like, I had people, it worked. My life is working. Like, people are seeing me and connecting to me, and I'm letting myself be connected to. I don't know, my makeup, it's God, it's a combination, but like, I reach out and I take risks. Not everybody, you know, finds it easy to do that, and it can be really difficult. And so don't think of yourself more highly than you want, but think of yourself and what you've been given by God, what you've been gifted. You know, what's your excess? We're all image bearers. I have 3 boys. And I remember after my first one, I was pregnant with the second, and I thought, how on earth am I going to love this kid? Like, I love my Willem. Like, no, I wasn't worried about not loving them, but, like, how does that even work? Like, he has my whole heart. It's like, oh, it just duplicates. It just extends. It just, and you know what the cool thing is when you're doing this connection thing, right? I have had that same feeling as when I look at the boys that are a part of me, that came from me. Like, I made them, I grew them, I painfully brought them into this world. It's like, and I love them. Like, I just, every part of me, I love them. And you know what, I felt that exact same way for people of zero blood relation to me. When I've saw them and I've connected to them and I've said, you know what, you're my family. Like, you're a part of me, because they are. We're all a part of each other. If you're a part of God, you're a part of so many more people than the people who are related to you by blood. And it's an amazing thing to build up your extended family with people from all walks of life, diverse, colorful, people who are difficult, people who are hilarious, people who can give you something, people who can give you nothing. When you see them, you feel that same grip for them that you do for the person that's the easiest to love in your life. And we love imperfectly, and God loves perfectly. Just think of what you could do when God, by his Spirit, gifts you with being able to love like him. Next is do an inventory of what you have to give. Time, grace, I'll give you some practical ideas in a second. Finances, a skill, what do you have excess of? We have a lot more excess than we realize, so that you need to sit back, like, what do I have? Do I have a room in my house that I don't really use often, that if, like, someone needs a place to stay for a night when they're coming into town, I can offer it to them? Do we have a pool in our backyard? Oh, I love the people who have pools in their backyard and invite me and my crazy kids to come swim. Like, they don't, maybe don't invite us back again, but, like, even the one time, like, saves my summer. See people, you know? Make a chart for yourself. Who's in your sphere of influence? We all have our immediate family, our spouse, our kids, our close friends, church members. You put them all into your circle because they're who God has given you, like it or not. Leaders, neighbors, Facebook acquaintances, the person who's always whining on Facebook publicly, maybe there's a reason for it. Give them something. What can you give them? Send them a Starbucks card through email. Say, hey, what's your email address? Just do something, you know, because you're seeing it every day. You might as well stop and not assume anyone. Maybe they keep doing it because nobody's seeing them and nobody's hearing them. What do you need? Listen, look, and pray. If you need something and you don't feel like you have anything to give, first of all, you always do. But if you need something from somebody else, sometimes you gotta ask for it. And risk putting yourself out there and having someone not see you. Ask another person and another person and another person and another person until somebody sees you, because that's what they were made for. You don't have to feel bad about it. They were made for it. the end, Romans 12:6-8, we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it's serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it's giving, then give generously. If it's to lead, do it diligently. If it's to show mercy, do it cheerfully. I'm going to rhyme off a quick list of things you can do. So take note if any of these are like, I can do that. Paint, cook, coffee, drop off a gift basket, help with gardening, clean their house, hold a baby. Shout out. Babysit the kids for an hour or two. Gift a date night. Do the laundry. Yes, Wendy. Help with renovations. Drive to a doctor's appointment. Pick up and drive home from church. Help redecorate a room in their house. Yes, Wendy. Visit. Email a Starbucks card. Go buy Just Because card and some flowers. Give it just because. Not because you want anything back from them or can get anything back. Facebook messages are okay. Little lame. Ask for an email or for an address and take it a step further. Pray for. Pray with. Do the research for some good apps, websites, resources for fellow parents who need some help. They're walking through a challenging time with one of their kids or a grandchild. So if you're good at using the internet, do some good Google searches and find them. Email me for that. I've got lots. Okay, money in an envelope. Anonymous. Pay for something. Some of you can pay for stuff. God bless the people who could pay for stuff in our lives when we needed it, because they changed everything for us. And that's my conclusion. If I don't know if worship band, you want to play some more music after me, but you can come on up if you want to. My life has been forever changed because of people who took the time to see me. Everything. And I can pinpoint it. I can pinpoint when I was 17 and I didn't want to live and my life was too confusing for a 17-year-old to process. And I had someone from my church who wasn't even paid, who saw me, who asked me, hey, come to this. He said, how are you? I believe in you. They didn't see the worst of me. They saw the literal best of me that I'm living out now at 30. They saw it when I was 17. And I remembered that, and it stuck with me through difficult times. Is, you know what? I think God used that person. I think maybe if they saw it in me, God sees it in me. And then when I was, you know, a young adult and had no idea what to do with my life, I had someone who sat there and talked to me for 5 hours about how the heck you know if you're supposed to marry someone. That's a pretty big commitment. And they probably were like, what an annoying conversation to sit and have to have. But they had it with me, and it changed everything. I had a woman in the back row there who came in at my most embarrassing time to invite someone into my life. And it was chaos, and I wasn't myself, and I was ashamed, and I felt like a failure as a wife, as a mother, as a pastor, as a Christian, as a person. And they just saw me, and they saw what I needed, and they grabbed the baby from my arms, and this whole row there, and they came and they walked into my life. They never said a word about it, and they just gave what they had to give. Some of them are baby whisperers. Some of them can fold a towel and a fitted sheet like no tomorrow, and I can't. And I look at my linen closet, and I'm like, if you can find people in your life who just make you go, like, it isn't so bad. Okay, I can do tomorrow. I can do the next day. And if you need a whole bunch of people to get you to breathe like that, you fight until you find those people. And you better believe that you're someone who can do that for another person. And so in my worst, this is some of the things we did. When I felt like what do I have to give when I can't even like have my children crying at the same time and function like a human being? I have something. I had not an extra room in my house. I had a very nicely, newly decorated nursery that I put the crib into our room and I gave to a teenager who's a punk and a half sometimes. But I love her to death. And you know what? We don't need as much space as we think we do. And so she's there. And sometimes she's not. And sometimes she is. And she knows it's a place that she can come with some rules. But she can come. I direct this girls' organization that I don't receive an income for and sometimes don't have time for. But you know why? Because my life literally changed at 17 when someone cared about me, and I will find time to care about 17-year-olds who need somebody to see them. We give in small ways, sometimes in big ways, whatever we can. Coffees, favorite snacks, like the small things are the big things. So, you know, don't get too stressed out about, I don't know, I can't go and renovate someone's house. It's like, okay, then don't. Like, but what can you do? So this is the last quote, my Bob Goff quote, and I love it with everything in me. So it's not up there, so I'll just read it to you. There is only one invitation it would kill me to refuse, yet I'm tempted to turn it down all the time. I get the invitation every morning when I wake up to actually live a life of complete engagement, complete connection. A life of whimsy, a life where love does. It doesn't come in an envelope. It's ushered in by a sunrise, the sound of a bird, or the smell of coffee drifting lazily from the kitchen. It's the invitation to actually live, to fully participate in this amazing life for one more day. Nobody turns down an invitation to the White House, but I've seen plenty of people turn down an invitation to fully live. Turning down this invitation comes in lots of flavors. It looks like numbing yourself or distracting yourself or seeing something really beautiful as just normal. It can also look like refusing to forgive or not being grateful or getting wrapped around the axle with fear or envy. I think every day God sends us an invitation to live, and sometimes we forget to show up or get head faked into thinking we haven't really been invited. But you see, we have been invited every day, all over again. And so that's all I want to say in a lot of minutes, is you are being invited every single moment of your lives to connect and to live life fully and to enjoy it at a cost sometimes, yeah, but it will never outweigh what you get given in return. And so I hope you'll say yes, and I'm going to try to as well, as imperfectly as we'll do it. If you're committed to trying, you're going to get further than if you don't try, right? So I'm going to pray and then give it to whoever. Dear God, we thank you so much for an amazing adventure of a life that you have gifted to us, that you stepped into our mess and you drew the line between our shame and our accusers, and you said, come be a part of my family, come be a part of an amazing life full of purpose. And so God, I pray that as you invite us to that every single day, that we would just say yes, and that after we say yes, we try to figure it out with your strength, with your wisdom, by your grace. God, I pray for every person in this room that if they feel like they have nothing to give and no gift, that you would reframe their thinking and they would see just how gifted they are, whether it's time or access or finances or a skill you've given them. May they just use it for your glory and in return feel what it's like to be a part of your family, to step into your will and to step into this amazing life that we've been called to live. And so God, give us the grace to do it, give us the peace to do it, give us the correction to do it, the conviction to do it, and give us your spirit again and again and again to be able to do it. We love you so incredibly much, and I pray that we would love the people who you have gifted to us. In your name we pray. Amen. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed being with you.